Did you know Grandma when she was young?
No. I met your grandma after I got out of the Navy and back to high school. I happened to meet her one night, and we started dating, and a couple of 3 years later, we got married.
Tell me about the Navy. How did you manage to get up there?
Well, one day, we shouldn't have did it, but we did. Three of us skipped school one afternoon in junior year. And we went to, we hitchhiked to La Crosse, Wisconsin, which is 45 miles away, to join the Navy. We decided we wanted to, I suppose partially because of being myself, being in such a large family, wanted to maybe get out of that situation. I think that was the case. But anyhow, we went to La Crosse and we joined the Navy. I was actually 10 days from being 17 years old, but they went ahead and made out all the papers and went to Great Lakes. And I was in the Navy actually for 10 days before they could square me in, because I wasn't 17 yet. And took my training at Great Lakes, and then I went to the Aleutian Islands and spent...
Where's that at?
That's the Aleutian Islands. It's a little chain of islands that goes south west off the coast of Alaska.
Oh, okay.
There's a number of little islands off through there, Radio City and Attu was the farthest island. There are quite a few hundred miles off the mainland of Alaska, but they were...
The cow?
No, you had a warm Japanese current running up through there, and we had very little snow, and it was not that cold. I spent almost 18 months up there. I kind of liked it, really. I saved a lot of money, and so I spent 9 months up there, and came home for a month on leave, and wanted to go back. Only because I could save a lot of money, and that was basically the reason going to the Navy. After I finished my tour duty, I went back to high school and finished my last year of high school, and then went to work on road construction, and then a year or so later, your grandmother and I got married, and that's when the work began for us.
Mm-hmm.
So,
did you like the Navy?
I like the Navy. I was sorry afterwards that I didn't stay with it, because financially, I think if a person goes into service, spends their 20 years and gets out, financially they're in much better shape than a lot of people. So. I don't know the education, of course. I didn't go on to college or anything. If you do, well, then of course you don't need something like that. But it was a good thing if you did not plan on furthering your education and getting one of these high-paying jobs and that sort of thing. But I liked it. But I still liked it when I got back home and went a different direction.
So then you met Grandma.
Yes, I met her one time, and we started dating, and a couple years later we got married, and had one boy, and ended up with five, but we moved to the, to a larger city, and
Dillon, Wisconsin,
yeah, we moved to Blount, Wisconsin. And I got a job at Fairbanks Morris as a machinist. They sent me to school, to a trade school, to learn the basic machine, basic as far as machines are concerned, and then training in the on the job training in the shop in the company. And I spent 2 or 3 years there, and then I. Went to Beloit Corporation. I quit Fairbanks, went to Beloit, and that was in 1955. I went to Blake Corporation. And as a machinist, in 1958, they offered me a job as a foreman, which I took. And then, of course, after I got the foreman's job, I had to go to a number of different schools. Like I was saying before, University of Wisconsin, a couple of extension courses, and Illinois Tool Works to learn trigonometry and the basic gear functions, and as far as that you have to know when you're in the shop and as a supervisor.
They
paid for us a 6-week course, couple times, University of Wisconsin, Clifford Berg and Associates, psychology in Rockford, Illinois, and Illinois Tool Works in Chicago, and a couple other places. So I had a lot of experience as far as machines. But basically, it was how to get along with people. You know, being a supervisor, you had to learn all this stuff. So basically, that's what it was. And after I was foreman then from 1958 to 1967, and then Beloit bought out a small company and wanted me to go run this company as plant manager, which I did, and we built a new plant. We outgrew that plant the first year, so we built a new one in Jamesville, Wisconsin in 1968. And then there was a company from Germany that, Passivant Corporation, that went in with Beloit on water pollution equipment and of that nature, equipment of that nature. Beloit was a paper-making company and a magnetic tape company. And we outgrew that plant in Jamesville, Wisconsin, we built in 68. And Beloit Corporation had a big facility in Birmingham that was closed down, so I came down here and opened that plant up and started the plant as Beloit Passivant Corporation. And in 1974, Passivant bought out the Beloit part of their partnership. I was supposed to go back to Beloit, Wisconsin, and Pastor Rock wanted me to stay with them, so they bought my seniority, and so therefore I've been in Birmingham since 1970. I stayed with Pastor Rock, and my family, we moved three of our kids came with us. The other two older ones were in Beloit, but they moved to Birmingham, and so we've been in Birmingham with our whole family, all five children, since 1970.
What about all your other brothers and sisters still up north?
All of my brothers and sisters are in Wisconsin, yes. From Beloit, Kenosha, Wisconsin, across Wisconsin. In Reedstown, my oldest sister was born and raised in Reedstown, still there. And I have one brother that died in the Army, and one brother that died as a baby. And other than that, there are still eight of us. We don't get back up there that often, but we like to go back up. The whole family and all of my wife's brothers and sisters, surviving brothers and sisters, are all in that area. They were all farmers. And some of my brothers and sisters were farmers also, but most of mine were not, but all of my wife's were, and some of them still farm.
Okay, since you've gotten older, and I don't mean old, can you see any of the effects from the Great Depression still?
No, I don't think so, no. I think it's after I was 20 years old, yes, I heard people talking about it and some of the hardships that they went through because of no jobs, and companies were just real bad shape. There was no work any place. I've heard people talk about it for a few years, but it gradually faded away, and I think after 10 years or so, you just very rarely heard it mentioned anymore. So it really didn't affect me, and I'm sure it must have affected a lot of the older folks, because, you know, for a few years they did talk about the hardships they had due to the depression and no work, no food. But I think the larger cities is what was hit harder than in our area. So therefore, we didn't hear that much about it. But I'm sure that people lived in the large cities thought about it for many, many years. And I'm sure it affected them much more than it did myself and my family. So, I just financially and myself, it had very little effect on me.
Yeah. What do you think if we wouldn't have had the Great Depression, you think it would have made a big difference as now?
I don't know. It might have been. I think the Depression hurt a lot of people, but it helped a lot of people in the sense of that manufacturing the unions came alive and got people work, and now whether or not unions are good or bad, I have no idea. But it did get a lot of people to thinking of things that could happen if it ever happened again. And so I don't know that it did anybody any good, but it may have in some instances where people really, and the government, I think, come up with programs to help at that time, and yet they still think of programs that you know, that had to be developed to help in case something like a depression would ever hit again. And I think they watch it a lot closer. So I don't think nowadays that a depression could really happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure it brought people closer together, like in, you know, small towns. If you had something you needed.
That's true. You're right. And everybody helped everybody. And like I say, my uncle, he had one cow, and the neighbor, at least some of our neighbors as kids, we'd go up there and he'd give us all a glass of milk. And that was because of the Depression. We didn't realize it, being as young as we were, 6, 7, 8 years old. We didn't realize how tough it was. But the older folks did, the parents did, and everybody had gardens. And if you didn't have something, somebody else did. They give it to them. And so as kids, we didn't realize much as parents did. But I'm sure that it did help bring a lot of people together.
Right. So maybe the Depression affected more the bigger cities because of industry.
Yeah, I think it was harder on the people there because they depended on the industry.
And y'all had your own gardens. You didn't have that much to do with the big cities, right?
No, we was 90 miles away from the largest city, and which was a manufacturing city, and.
That was
Madison. Madison. We were a couple of hundred miles away from Chicago, and at that time you didn't have television. You had battery operator radios. There were very few people that had electricity, and when we were that young, so we didn't hear that much about it, and it didn't affect us like it did the people that lived in the cities. I can see today how hard it would be for them, with their soup lines and. Standing in line to try to get a slice of bread and a bowl of soup would be tough. And I don't think any of us today could realize what that would be. And at least I couldn't, although myself probably more so than you, because there have been many times where we had a slice of bread with bacon grease on it for a sandwich to take to school. So it's... We did see some hard times, but not like the people in the city.
Right. I was going to ask you, when did you you had such a large family, and in such a small town, it's hard to make any money, you know, because your father wasn't extensively educated.
Right.
When did you get your first car?
Well, that
the family just, car? Whatever.
No, my dad never had a car.
Never?
Not till all of us kids were out of school, uh-huh. And we were fortunate that out of the 10 of us kids, I think there was one, well, other than the baby that died, there was one of the boys that did not graduate from high school. And so we did not have a car, and fact is I didn't have a bicycle. I didn't have my own sled. So it was always hand-me-downs. But that was one of the reasons, I think, that I joined the Navy, was to get out, because it was tough. Mm-hmm. And so I got my first car after I got out of the Navy, and bought my own car.
What was it? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was a 35 Chevrolet. 1935 Chevrolet. And I wish I had it today. It would be worth a lot of money.
Yeah, I know it.
And a lot of the cars that I had back in those days, the 37 Nash Lafayette, the 40 Nash, and 41 Chrysler, and on up the line until I got my first car in 53, first new car in 53. If I had them all today, I'd be rich.
No. Okay, well, we can see that the effects of the Great Depression on a small town, and, you know, like you said, you talk to people that you work with about later on how it affected them, and at least you're fortunate enough to live in a small town, one of the few positives of that. Well, thank you very much for the interview.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you very much.